Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the show. It's brought to you in association with Levi Solicitors, who will offer you a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. We're hopping in the DeLorean again. Dan here with Michael and Moscow White, Daniel Chapman, as we go back to 1999, before the millennium bug.
Oh, it was bad, that, wasn't it?
Took over.
Remember the cash points spitting out all that money?
The computers all
planes
crashed.
Planes falling out of the sky. It was awful.
It was wild, wasn't it? Two games remaining in this season, and Arsenal came to Elland Road on the same points as Manchester United. And this is the Square Ball Guide to Leeds United spoiling Arsenal's fun in 1999.
Smith. Kewell. Got plenty in the box here, Leeds. Kewell looks at Hasselbank. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has scored what could be a critical goal in the Premiership season. It might be the goal that ruins Arsenal's chances of retaining the title, and they know it.
Bit of a weird season, a fun season, but it looked like we might have a title challenge briefly for like a week, then we managed to lose a few games in quick succession, then it looked like we might get in the Champions League. But we lost to Chelsea the week before this, so that meant they were pretty much secure of it. So we were stuck in fourth, which was great. Fourth was good.
UEFA Cup, as it was at that point.
Yeah, it wasn't sexy fourth like it is now. It was, it's fine fourth. But then the UEFA Cup was a good competition in those days, so it wasn't too bad. So there was only one league place for it, because it went to ultimately went to the losers of the FA Cup and the winners of the League Cup in this season.
The only downside to the UEFA Cup at this time was the risk that we'd just be playing Maritimo again. Because that's what seems to happen every time we got into Europe. We would play Maritimo, but it was still pretty exciting getting into. It was more exciting because we were dead sexy and fun, basically.
Yeah, we were on a proper upswing, weren't we? The early pre-madness O'Leary upswing, when all the babies were coming through.
The way it was described in this match by, I believe, Michael, when we were discussing earlier, of it's the Puma shirts, it's Woodgate with his frosted tips. It's Alan Smith in full curtains mode. It's dreadful to say the name now, but Harry Kewell wearing 19 and looking like the best player in Europe at the time was all just like coming together.
And then you've got sort of future sexy leads there, but still David Hopkin.
Yeah, and Alfie Haaland.
And Alfie Haaland playing right back in this one.
Yeah, and David Batty as well, who's not the only time he was associated. Do you remember when Channel 5 did the sexy football advert with him, because he was playing for Rude Hullet's Newcastle, and they had the rights to their UEFA Cup games on Channel 5. So they did a photo. They took the top half of David Batty's body wearing a Newcastle shirt, and the bottom half was a lady's legs in stockings and suspenders, and they advertised it as sexy football on Channel 5. And
how do you know they weren't Batty's legs?
He didn't recognise them. He did think it was a laugh, though. He thought it was great fun, although I think it got criticism at the time.
I did enjoy this season because we routinely got attendances over 40,000 inside Elland Road, which always felt like an exciting threshold to cross. And for this one, we got 40,124. 11th of May, 1999, this one. I was 2 to 3 weeks out from finishing my university course and having my final exam.
Yeah, I was at school for this one, but it was a great game. I've enjoyed this season as a whole, and I kind of enjoyed looking back at how weird it was, because I feel like you don't get seasons like this anymore. When you look back at Christmas and Aston Villa atop under John Gregory and future Leeds legend, Julian Joachim was getting a few goals from, future TV presenter extraordinaire Dion Dublin was doing well for him. And despite being pre-season favourites, Man United and Arsenal was sort of there or thereabouts, but neither had started the season particularly well.
Arsenal were behind us. at that point. We were fifth, they were sixth. Middlesbrough up in fourth. And that's, I think that's what you're getting at, is that pre-season, a team you don't fancy sort of having an early season surge, being top around Christmas. Whereas now it's just Man City go top and stay there.
Mm.
Whereas it used to be a bit of a variety. Even you'd be looking at Wimbledon in eighth and thinking, well, could they get into Europe with their minus six goal difference from 18 games?
And they both went on pretty mad runs Christmas onwards, didn't they? Arsenal and Man United.
Yeah, they didn't. They just didn't lose from that point on, having had a bit of a shaky start. I mean, Arsenal, as a weird little George Graham tribute, drew three of their opening four games 0-0, which is an odd way to mount a title challenge. But I mean, the defensive solidity did stay throughout the season. They conceded, well, I've got a table here, but I think by the time they came to Elland Road, they had conceded 16 goals.
Yeah, that's not very many.
Having played 36 games.
Wow.
The next
so
best,
they were tight.
The next best defence at that point was Chelsea, had conceded 29, which even my math, that's almost twice as many. But it tells you something unfortunate about Scum's attackers, that their goal difference was exactly the same as Arsenal. So they conceded 20 more goals, but had scored 20 more goals. Sickening.
And Aston Villa's title challenge didn't last too long.
They're behind us now.
Yeah, they went to Everton on January the 18th and won, but then they didn't win again until April the 10th, which is a long time.
That is a long time.
So they plummeted.
Which, in contrast with Arsenal, who played, what, 21 games from just before Christmas, only drew three and lost one, which was this one.
Yeah, I mean, them and Scum just didn't lose games at all. And then they even went to this is the season they went to a replay against each other in a cup.
Was that at Villa Park, the Giggs goal?
Yeah.
Horrible, awful scenes.
Yes.
No, nobody needs that, do they? Anyway, David O'Leary was stoking the flames before this one, needlessly.
It was all coming to, because this is the penultimate game of the season, so lose, and given that neither team is losing whatsoever, if Arsenal lose to us, handing the title to Scum on a plate. And the other subplot is obviously David O'Leary being a former Arsenal centre-half and our new manager. And I look back at his pre-match interviews, and I do wonder who the hell he thought he was, because the big headline on the back of the Mirror was, Wenger will leave Arsenal in the C*P, because you can't write...
What did you say, co-op?
Co-op.
Yeah.
Because you can't write the word crap on the back of a tabloid newspaper. Yeah, and he said, Arsene is a very clever man, and the question then will be whether he will stay around or leave some other poor bloke to clear up all the crap when his defence retires. It would not surprise me if he left. So O'Leary's theory was that Adams, Keown, Seaman, Winterburn, Dixon and Bold have been the backbone of Arsenal for years, and they are basically the reason why they've only conceded 16 goals and the reason why they might be winning the league. Wenger has had very little to do with it, therefore, and the continental way, says O'Leary, has always been to come in, do a job and get out while the going's good. And I'm sure he recognises how lucky he was to inherit that Arsenal defence. It's a team within a team. I'm not sure Arsene will still be at Arsenal in 3 years' time. And if he leaves, it will be interesting to see whether the rest of the French lads will leave too. So he's really gone in for one, all the successes down to George Graham's defenders. Wenger has been lucky to inherit them, and he'll probably just stick around for a couple of years, and then him and all the French lads will fuck off, because that's what the continental way is. So it's really like bang, 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 shots fired, eve of the match, big headlines on the back of the Daily Mirror, just the way I suspect he wanted it. Inside as well, there was Tony Adams with a headline saying, O'Leary was just like a father to me. Now he stands in the way of our title. And yeah, full double page preview, key battle, Radebe versus Bergkamp, Bowyer versus Petit, all the predicted lineups, photos of Tony Adams and David O'Leary together when they were playing for Arsenal. All big, big pre-match stuff, and all live on Sky, so everybody's excited about it.
Tuesday night under the lights, Moscow.
Elland Road has probably rarely been better than Tuesday nights under the lights in the first sort of 10 years of the Premier League. For our generation, I suppose, you always remember your own generation the best. But even I was watching this in a pub, but even the fact it's Elland Road under the floodlights on Tuesday night gave it that extra little dimension of, and if we were playing Maritimo, there probably would have been like 30,000 people in. It would have been great.
Oh, well, there is shit talking pre-game as well. This isn't Wenger's first season. He's not just arrived and not done anything. He won a double the year before.
Oh, so he was lucky though.
He's won the double. He got them.
He inherited Steve Bold
on the verge of another league title, which they'd not won since, well, prior to his arrival. They'd not won one for quite a while, had they? It was George Graham era, so they'd had quite a few barren years in the middle of it.
He was no Bruce Rioch.
And he was just like, nah, he's done nothing, this bloke.
Well, I mean, there's sort of a point about the defence, because it is extraordinary to look at a team that has Dennis Bergkamp and Nicolas Anelka at one end, and then Martin Keown and Steve Bold at the other. But it's not that Wenger just sat back and let that happen. He managed to create a team with these two completely different parts and make it all work brilliantly together. Probably Petit in midfield with Patrick Vieira were probably, because they were good ball players.
Let's do the lineup.
Also, I've just got to say, they've got the real kind of the hardness that comes from Keown, and I don't just mean trying to look at him.
It was the archetypal Arsenal defence. You had Seaman in goal, Dixon, Adams, Winterburn and Keown. And then in midfield, Petit, Vieira, Overmars and Parler, with Anelka and Bergkamp up front, subs who featured in the game. Nelson Vivas, Kaba Diawara and Kanu all came on in this. I mean, that is a bloody strong Arsenal side, isn't it? I mean, the archetypal Wenger side in many ways.
Patrick Vieira is brilliant in this game. He's probably the best midfielder on the pitch. He just does a few little things. And he was the new kind of archetype for a midfielder, wasn't he? As well, everyone at the time went, well, every midfielder is just going to have to be Patrick Vieira from now on, because he's really big and he's fairly quick, but he's still got a really good touch, but he still can tackle and he can head it. It was like, this was ahead of the Barcelona team, where it changed to actually no midfielders could be small again. Everyone went, well, everyone needs big midfielders.
And we ended up signing
the way we're going to have to do it.
Oli de Cor, who was kind of in that mould. He wasn't quite as gangly as Vieira was, but he had the same skill set, didn't he?
Stephen McPhail absolutely betrayed by this era of football. He'd been born a little bit earlier, so he would have been fine in the Premier League, or a little bit later, so he could have played for Barcelona. But just in this era, when it was all Vieira and Keane.
But we weren't half bad, you know. For Leeds, Nigel Martin in goal, Ovs. Defenders, you got Woodgate and Radebe at the back, with Haaland playing right back, as you mentioned, and Ian Hart at left back. Bowyer, Kewell, Batty and Hopkin in the midfield, with Jimmy and Alan Smith up front, Jimmy Hasselbank completing the lineup.
The other thing that makes this a classic Leeds team is its super sneery Hasselbank era. Every time the camera cuts to him, he looks cross about something.
Furious, wasn't he? A furious man.
This was the season when he celebrated every goal by trying to fight his teammate, wasn't it? Like, his first year, he'd done somersaults, and then for some reason, season two, yeah, he just looked really angry all the time. And it was when Ian Hart scored a free kick and he ran up and just punched him. It's one of the great moments.
Would you say he was
Hasselbank
living La Vida Loca, perhaps?
Why?
That was number one in the charts.
Oh, okay.
Number one in the charts in America, Ricky Martin, and you got Backstreet Boys. I Want It That Way in the UK charts.
You see, when I was researching this, I noticed that this game pretty much coincided with Katie Hill announcing that she was going to leave Blue Peter, but I sensibly decided that wasn't going to be worth shoehorning in, because What's-His-Face had been sacked for his cocaine binge and everybody was leaving
Bacon.
Because of that. Yeah, there was only Connie Hook
John
left.
Noakes. just needlessly lumping him in with some drug use. No, it was Richard Bacon.
It was Shep. Shep face down in a bucket
of snow. So cocaine's like dog. Right, anyway.
Down, Shep, down.
So we've announced those teams. We've had Ricky Martin over the PA system. And then
everybody's like, oh, do you think Katie Hill's going to be on a Friday? 40,124.
Yeah, and the bastards turned us around, so we're playing towards the cop first half, which we don't like, do we?
No, it would have been amazing if Batty's early strike goes in front of the cop. Because he never scored for us, did he, in his second spell? Which was a shame.
Will he stop trying? Out of spite.
There was that, yeah.
Because every time he got the ball from distance, the Leeds fans started shouting at him, shoot! And he got annoyed about it, so deliberately stopped shooting.
Yeah.
Love him.
One of my regrets, though, I never got to see a David Batty goal in the flesh.
Oh,
I saw the end of his first spell.
I saw the one at Man City. Like the OG one. I was there for that.
But this could have been great. It's the first couple of minutes, and I mean, we're going to give Hopkin credit for setting it up by hitting an absolutely abysmal shot that kind of deflects up. Hopkin's shot is going to trickle about 10 yards wide, but it rebounds up and Batty hits it on the volley for about 30 yards, and it's close.
One of those moments.
It's not very close, but it's David Batty close.
I mean, he scores a couple of good goals for Blackburn in Newcastle and the one for us against Notts County that stands out. And everybody always talked about shooting in training. I think he could have scored 20 a season if he wanted.
He just couldn't be asked.
Just couldn't. Nah,
could not like be asked.
Striker's job, innit? Why is he going to do their job for them?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's some other fun kind of things to pick out from this game beyond Hasselbaink being furious with just about everything. Corners, still terrible, which is refreshingly on brand.
Yep, a couple of players have a go at it. Same result, headed out the near post.
Some Arsenal needle, you can stick your George Graham up your arse. Some of that being sung by the crowd. And within half an hour, we're olaying passes, which is, it's always got, talking about living La Vida Loca, that kind of carnival end of season feel when nothing really is on the line for us.
There's a Mexican wave in the second half as well, which is takes me by surprise. Because it's nil-nil at that point as well. It's not even when we're in the lead in the last few minutes and the ball's just down in the corner, sort of northeast corner, and you can see a Mexican wave going around.
When was the last time we had a Mexican wave at Elland Road? It's the case game.
There would have been a Radebe's testimony. There
was a point at which they were going to rename it the Leeds Leaps, such was its prevalence at Elland Road. Do you remember that? Yeah, they were saying, never mind calling it a Mexican wave, it should be renamed the Leeds Leap.
You used to get a boo as you went around to the West Stand because they didn't do it sometimes.
Yeah. I think that kind of, and the Olays kind of cuts to the core of what this game was all about, because all the build-up from outside was, do Leeds want to hand the Premier League title to their biggest rivals from over the Pennines? How are they going to play it? Are they going to throw the game? There was even like Arsenal fans thinking that's going to happen, that they'll deliberately, Scum fans thinking that's what's going to happen, that we'll deliberately lose because it's O'Leary used to play for Arsenal, who want them to win. But then it all got a bit confused with O'Leary doing his pre-match press and slagging off Wenger because basically he'd loved Alex Ferguson. But once the game started, we just didn't care. And I think that's what people completely missed is the anarchic sides of Leeds fans. It's like, are they going to try and, is it going to be a big chess game?
Are you suggesting people aren't aware that we're quite anarchic?
I think it takes them by surprise sometimes, because that's all the pretty much, is it going to be like this complicated chess game, this strategy of who do they want to win? And on the night, we just wanted to beat Arsenal because it would be funny because they were there and we'd be able to watch them actually cry. And the other thing that then built up was the way that Arsenal, Vieira and Petit being brilliant players, but real, like they had attitude with them as well of being real narky bastards. And then Keown, Adams, Winterburn, Dixon all being raging knobheads as well just meant that everything else faded away. And what mattered was having a real big party at Arsenal's expense.
Which is what it turned into. How did it unfold then, Michael?
Well, Martin Keown gets injured. That's the first thing to talk about. That's Hasselbaink picking up one of his classic bookings. I'm sure he did this most weeks. A decision to go against him. I think at this point he's calling for a handball or something on the halfway line. But then he just set off like a bull, and you just think,
no, he whinged first.
Yellow card incoming.
He spent a while whinging, and then as play went on, he was like, right, I'm going to go and kick him.
I'm just going to go fuck someone up. He used to do this all the time, I'm sure. And I think because of the era, you didn't always get booked for it, but every game he'd do this.
You leave one on someone.
You just see him, a decision go against him, and then you go, right, countdown from about 10 seconds here, there's a booking. And surely enough, if he could catch up with someone, he did.
It's quite a fiery attack, isn't it, him and Alan Smith? Just thinking about the two of them together there.
But it's a good value booking.
Yeah.
This one.
I love it. It took two, there's two bites. So he goes for Keown, who I think he's decided to take his marker out. And he's down and he's injured for a while, so there's some treatment. But then he carries on. And then he goes down again. And that's when you get the close up of his leg and you realise that there's a huge bleeding gash. And I don't know if the Arsenal physio like second time coming out, like, oh, that leg. didn't realize that's what you were talking about. Oh, I was looking at these legs. How did you miss the fact that there is blood pouring out of his wound just above his ankle? It's got him right behind the shin pad. It's great precision from Hasselbank, but how they didn't seem to pay it much mind the first time around. They've not put a plaster on it or anything. And then he goes down again after 5 minutes. Oh, sorry, Martin, wasn't looking at that.
Dirty Arsenal bastards. Anyway, they gave us a penalty, didn't they?
I mean, that was Keown again. And I mean, before that, there's Martin makes a couple of decent saves, doesn't he? In this, he's making good saves all through this game, Martin, actually.
We give him a lot to do as well.
This is just what Martin was like at this point. And this was during the Martin, Dave Seaman, who's the best goalkeeper. And clearly it was Martin, but the save because
from,
of bias.
The save from Anelka in this game is brilliant. Because it rebounds to Anelka inside the penalty area. And he takes it way earlier than you'd expect from much closer range, and he tips it over the bar, stops his volley, and it's outstanding. And then it's as good as when late in the game he runs out to stop a ball over the top that I think Haaland is not going to get back to, and he clears it towards Hart, and Hart just kicks it straight back at him, so he has to clear it again, and he runs off laughing. But I feel like that's what we were doing the whole game, is just like making Nigel Martin's life really difficult, and him just pulling off a brilliant save and going, all right, I'm really like, that's a lot of fun and I'm having a great time, but maybe if you could not do all this, I would prefer it.
Seaman does make one decent save, in fairness to him, from Kewell from about 30 yards. It's kind of a little bit like Kewell's goal against Roma.
Yeah.
But this one gets put behind for a corner.
The replay, it's going absolutely plumb in the top corner, isn't it?
So what happened with the penalty then?
Martin Keown absolutely destroys Alan Smith and then moans about it. It's an awful tackle. He doesn't even get booked for it. I mean, this is probably a red card these days. And then he stands up and you see a close-up of his face going, I got the ball!
Yeah, he can't believe that there's any prospect of a penalty. He's about 5 yards away from the ball.
It's described in the BBC report as a reckless lunge.
He's got 2 foot through
Alan
Smith's legs.
It's like mid-shin on Alan Smith with the ball nowhere near. But he's furious it's given, isn't he? I can't believe how upset he is by
just
this.
Looking at the photos here on the BBC report reminds me that, of course, Arsenal were in their home kit. They normally wear their away kit at Leeds because there's quite a lot of white, albeit not a complete clash. But I was very excited by the fact that they wore their home kit for this game. It felt exciting.
Never even considered that. But yeah, you're right. But yeah, so we've won this penalty, and then Ian Hart goes for straight down the middle with power, but underside of the bar, and then back to Hasselbank, and he hits it straight at Seaman, who's still on the floor pretty much.
Damn.
That was the big chance, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, into the second half, we should probably have had another one, no?
Smith threw, not even probably.
Smith threw it, and this time it's Adams.
Yeah, another awful tackle. Into the second half, Smith's coming into this game and starting to really annoy people as well, which is good. Adams is trying his best to boot him about the place, and Smith, in his sort of attitude at this point with his floppy hair, it was just to get up and sort of smile in people's faces.
Yeah.
And then boot him a bit later on. So, but yeah, this is definitely another penalty. Smith goes through on goal, and Adams comes across, gets nothing of the ball.
No.
And quite a lot of Smith. But I think probably having Keown shout in his face for the first one, the ref probably thinks, no, not this time.
Not worth it.
He completely clears him out. It's hilarious. Smith goes flying. The ball, there's absolutely no question of contact on the ball, but Alan Smith is flying through the air, and the referee's like, no, good tackle.
I mean, you can contrast that with Alfie Haaland, who is hard done to when he accidentally knees Winterburn in the nose.
It's a Leeds free kick. Which is, in fairness,
Alfie is not hard done to whatsoever. Alfie is living his best life.
In fairness, it is a foul because Nigel Winterburn takes Alfie out by getting his nose onto his knee, which is a very sly way of doing things.
Yeah. And there's a great moment when you watch on the replay as Alfie is blundering sort of through him. Winterburn throws his hands up in front of his face because he can see this knee about to smash him straight in the middle, but it's too late.
And then as he lays on the pitch with blood absolutely pissing out of his face, Haaland just comes up behind him and picks him up.
Yeah, let's get him
and
up.
He's like, Winterburn's clearly like, no, put me down.
Yeah, he's sort of stretching off.
My face is completely in bits here.
On comes Nelson Vivas, who is actually, let's jump ahead here now to the crucial moment that everyone remembers.
Well, I like it with the medical team, because it's a bad one because both medical teams are on.
Mm. Oh, right. Okay.
And someone even brings on a little silver suitcase at some point, which I'm not sure I don't think that's like the screen to have him put down or something. Yeah. It's got the lethal injection in there. They decide
it's got the special drugs.
It's too much. But yeah, I've never seen that before.
And Vivas comes on, but he's involved in the goal that wins us the game ultimately. But Batty shoots just over seconds before this goal happens. But what a glorious moment, 5 minutes from the end.
Yeah, I mean, the Batty one, it's a bit like the one against us the other week where a goalkeeper clears the ball and it goes to someone who just hits it early in over the top.
Except again, with Batty, he controls the kick out with his left foot and then shoots. It's a beautiful chip with his left foot. And you think, just do that all the time, David. It's not even his good foot. It's his left foot. And he's just like Pele trying to lob the England goalkeeper into the top corner. He's got him scrambling and it goes inches wide. David, just do this all the time. It would be great.
But a game that was like two heavyweight boxers slugging it out, and we finally landed the blow that ended the contest just a few minutes from the end. And it was kind of, I don't know, the embodiment of that freewheeling attitude that Leeds could go into this game with, because Arsenal had it all on the line. Leeds, it didn't really matter what happened. If we lost as a fan base, we'd have been like,
fourth.
Yeah, and it means that Scum don't win the title.
Yep.
But to do this was just great fun.
I definitely went into this kind of hoping we'd lose. But then when this went in, just went,
It's because when you're in it for 90 minutes and you're concentrating on the game, you're not really thinking about Alex Ferguson and Teddy Sheringham and fucking all the Scum fans. It fades to the background because you've got Martin Keown smashing through Alan Smith's legs and then turns to the referee and going, I got the ball. What's up? What are you giving that for? And 90 minutes of them trying to fight Alan Smith and all that kind of stuff. And at the end, he's like, forget what's happening outside this stadium. It's you lot that we want to see lose.
And we did. And the fans after the goal were looking very sad. But the goal itself, I mean, what a glorious moment.
I mean, maybe O'Leary was right about once that defence goes, he's going to be screwed. Because it's a nice crossover. It's Hart, isn't it, on the left. Puts a ball into the far post. Nelson Vivas, who in fairness wasn't a left back, was he? I think he was a right back, more typically for Arsenal. Sometimes played in defensive midfield, so he's on out of position. But little tiny Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank sneaks in behind him, doesn't he? With his little delicate footsteps, and just does a nice close-range diving header.
I mean, you want to be fair to Nelson Vivas in the post-match. Arsene Wenger said that it was a huge tactical mistake at the far post, was his bitterly disappointed description of the Leeds winner. And one of the journalists said, by Vivas? Yes, was the crushing reply. So there was absolutely no question of protecting Nelson Vivas at that point. It was just like, yep, it was his fault. He's to blame. He's the one. But actually, it was a great header by Hasselbank and his last goal for Leeds.
His final act as a Leeds player.
Apart from that pre-season friendly when everybody booed him.
At Celtic.
Yeah.
I was at that as well.
Yeah. Is that the only one he played that pre-season?
I think so, yeah.
He was hanging around in pre-season far too long.
We were in the Lazio kit, if I remember right. And we actually won up at Celtic, didn't we?
So it was worth it to get photos of him in the Lazio kit because that looked great. It's a bit like the lesser spotted photos of Rob Molinar wearing the yellow Strongbow kit, but that's another subject.
So we handed the title to Scum. It's funny how the stars all aligned around this. Jimmy's off to Atletico Madrid that summer, top scorer in the Premier League with 18 alongside Owen and York. And then they went to Blackburn, did the Scumbags the day after this, drew 0-0.
I mean, so, Blackburn were crap as well. So it was one of those ones that you think, if only we'd not won this, Arsenal probably would have won the title.
There was the other subplot as well, was about Scum relegating Brian Kidd's Blackburn because he had yet to come and stink our club out, but was on his way. I was also going to say, from the match, Woodgate stands out because we talked about them having Bergkamp and Anelka up front. The way he just blocked Bergkamp all night, you look at Woodgate in this game and you just think, how did he not win 200 caps and all the World Cups and lead us to Champions League glory because he's absolutely immense.
By having knees made of candy floss.
And I think the spending 2 years crying because he's been implicated in a court case didn't help either. But there's so much talent on display in our team and you can see where it just needed. You just need a better right back than Haaland. But we had Kelly and you just need... and we did the upgrade from... Hopkins, eventually you get the core in there and you just, and obviously Hasselbank going meant we had to go and find Viduka eventually, but there's so much good stuff in there. It's a little bit, I thought Woodgate was immense in this.
Hasselbank was good as well, I have to say. Some of his game in this, I'd almost forgotten about. Some of it is a little bit Willy Nonto in a way, in that when he pulls into wide areas and puts crosses in. Like, he almost doesn't do anything fancy with his crosses, but just there are a couple that he puts right in dangerous areas where you just sort of begging for someone to get in the end of him.
He hit it dead hard, did Jimmy Hassel.
He did.
Which is what Willie likes to do as well, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Likes to kick it dead hard.
It is a little bit like O'Leary trying to sign every striker in the world, but I do wonder what a partnership of Viduka and Hasselbank might have looked like. Did they play together at Middlesbrough in the end?
The classic big man, big man.
Yeah. Did they get together at Borough?
Maybe. I can't remember. Conversation for another day, but yeah. the denouement here was that we essentially handed Scum the treble by doing this.
They'd have done it anyway.
So they beat Newcastle in the FA Cup final and then Bayern Munich in the Champions League final, which is obviously tiresome. Any regrets about allowing this to happen?
I mean, there's no good results. Like if Bayern Munich had won the Champions League, it's just another fraudulent star to stick on their badge of theft, isn't it?
And anyway, we went to Coventry on the final day of the season and drew 2-2, and that's the real quiz.
Yeah, that's where the real action was.
Clyde Vinard with the goal there.
There we go. And that is the TSB guide to Leeds United ruining Arsenal's fun in 1999. We'll see you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.